Hello.
Hi, Mr. Davies. It's Michael from MMA Legal, sir. How are you?
Oh, how are you doing, sir? I'm doing fine, Just crawled in my bed.
Nice. Half ten wake up. That's cool. Obviously, Charles, we had a call yesterday around your conviction.
Yep.
And whether the Scottish Redress would obviously accept that as a claim. And
uh-huh.
I spoke to my lawyer, or our lawyer, who has been saying, spoke to the Scottish Redress, and each case is judged on its merits. I think it's more around them paying somebody who could be a danger to the public. Now,
all right.
Obviously, your case was over 30 years ago, and you haven't offended since.
No, Paul.
So I've been advised, Charles, that we can definitely submit your case and obviously help you. Help you with trying to get some sort of recognition of what happened to you, and also obviously some sort of monetary compensation as well.
All right.
Is that okay?
Aye, definitely.
So what I'll do, Mr. Davies, if it's all right with you, is I'll have a chat with you now. Just to let you know, all our calls are recorded for training and monitoring purposes, even though, you know, I did tell you that yesterday. I'll have a chat with you now about your impact of what happened to you in care, and how that's followed you into your adult life.
Yep.
Whether that be, you know, depression, PTSD, anxiety, alcohol, drug issues. And what I'll do, Charles, is I'll write to those relevant authorities. I'll gather all the information, and I'll obviously paint an accurate picture of, you know, the impact of the trauma.
Definitely.
Affected you. Is that okay, Charles?
Yeah.
Okay, perfect. So have you ever suffered, or do you suffer with depression, anxiety, PTSD?
I was on the sick for 6 years under the depression rules. It was quite simple. I mean, when I came out of prison, I couldn't find employment. Because of my conviction, they tried to send me to various jobs, and I ended up fighting them in appeal. And I won my appeal on the sense of they tried to tell me, no, I don't tell them about it. And I quoted the fact that coming out of prison, having been done for that, I mean, by the way, I appealed against it. As I say, my brother-in-law had third Queen's evidence on me. He got dismissed, but he caught a deferred sentence. And then later on, he killed himself when I came out of prison.
Uh-huh.
He couldn't handle the guilt of what he'd done. But way back in 1974, when I got sent to a prude school, I was getting verbal abuse in there and just a wee boy and getting bossed about. And then I got sent to a prude school, and that's where the first kind of bit of abuse started, where we were all carrying on the dormitory one night, pillow fighting. And the headmaster got called in, and we all got chained into the boardroom. Jammies down to the ankles and a leather school belt, 6 across the arse.
Oh, wow.
Pretty sore, pretty humiliating. It kind of turned me against the system. And
yeah,
I had to go for a nice wee quiet boy to kind of, how could you put it? My whole life just changed at that point. I didn't realise it.
Yeah.
And then I kept doing things. My mum and dad had turned me to a psychiatrist. Back in the day, the psychiatrist was the attitude. It's just one of these boys that does what he wants.
Yeah.
Nowadays, if we come away with ADHD or something's happened to him or whatever, didn't realise the effect of it. The fact that I ended up where I ended up was actually, this might sound wrong, but it was actually an eye-opener, because I actually started to discover about myself where I was going wrong. And one of my biggest regrets is still with me every day in my life. I wish I had told my mum and dad what happened.
It would have been
sorted out, but I just kept it to myself, and I kept on going. And many a time I've asked myself, why do you, even the police used to say to me, why do you steal cars? Why do you do this? Your dad was an ex-sergeant in the army. Your mum was a staff nurse. Your family's a respectable family. Why? And I used to say, I don't know. And I didn't know. I remember being young, looking and standing staring in mirrors and going, I want to be a gangster. Nobody's got to touch me again. Just so as nobody could get near me. I spent a lot of my life keeping away from people. I'm still a loner to this day. I've got a handful of pals that I can really trust, and believe it or not, most of my pals have all been in trouble themselves, so they all understand where we come from, you know what I mean?
Yeah, of course.
The government's no much help. My doctor tried his best years ago to get me into counselling, but because I was classed more or less as an abuser,
I was after
I came out of prison, I was classed more or less as an abuser, they couldn't put me in a group with victims. And I understand that wholeheartedly.
Yeah.
It doesn't take away the fact of what has happened during my younger days. I see, I went from there to Borstal. I got my nose broken in Borstal over in a fight. The staff weren't that bothered about it, you know what I mean? Other things happened to me in Berlin, just typical prison, and just had to get tougher and tougher all the time, you know what I mean?
Yeah, of course.
That's the effect it's had on me. I mean, as I said to you yesterday, up until that happened, I sat at the front of school, front of the class. I was Miss Scott's number one pupil. My writing was spot on, my everything, gold stars and my jotters and whatnot, and then a year later I was getting sent into the corner of the class, telling teachers to fuck off, throwing chairs at them.
Yeah.
And the reputation preceded me. Even today, 40 years later, there's people I went to school with, I bump into and go, oh, I remember you at the school, Chile. Or you used to hang your teachers, be your teachers and all. I just couldn't be bothered with anybody. I couldn't.
Yeah.
I talk about it a lot now because I've got a good wee partner and she's understanding, and we sit down and again, situations are right, where it brings something out,
hopefully.
Or start
it
talking.
Helps, doesn't it?
Even yesterday when I came off the phone, my missus said a lot to me, she goes, you're upset, aren't you? I says, Widow, no, I'm fine. No, you're no. What was that all about on the phone? And I told her I'd been speaking to you, and she goes, I can see it in your face. I said, ah, well, every time you talk about it, and it takes you battles, not forwards, you know what I mean?
Yeah, I'm sorry I have to drag you over that, buddy. And
No, it's not your fault, pal. It's one of these things.
Yeah, no, I'm sorry.
I mean, I was even through the job centre, as I say, when I was on the sick, my personal advisor, you get, personal advisor or something, and they wanted me to go and train to be a counsellor because of what I came through,
yeah.
And I just thought, no, I can't do this every day of the week, talking to people and.
Yeah.
I do, don't get me wrong, I've got pals that come to me for advice and they ask me how to go on because I just got on with life. My dad, as I say, was an ex-soldier.
Yeah.
The attitude was, if you fall down, just get back up, you know?
Yeah, of course, old school.
Old school, that's the word, old school, they don't understand that nowadays.
No. Was you on any sort of medication from your doctor for the depression for the 6 years when you were on the sick?
I was on various different tablets. It worked
out.
Okay.
I'll find what they are. I don't need you to remember. It's totally fine. I'll get that.
It worked out. I had what they call manic depression. One day I was fine, laughing and joking, kind of, and the next day I'd be just no talk to anybody. I'd be sitting in the corner and people going, what's wrong with you? Nothing. Leave me alone.
Yeah.
None.
Yeah.
I know it takes me something to trigger my mind off, and Mainly your conscience for the past, some of the silly things I've done. Man, drastically bad, but even the situation where I got done with Ray, it was a party we were at, and the girl was up for it and whatnot, but when her boyfriend came back into the house, she wasn't up for it, and I found myself in a situation where I was fucking hell, man. Wow.
Yeah,
and then my brother-in-law, 3 days into the trial, they adjourned the trial early. My solicitor says, I went and got some tea. He says, when you come back, I think this is getting thrown out. And when I went back to the High Court, my brother-in-law had gave a statement to the prosecution, and he stood in the witness box, and when they said to him, and I mean, I'm going back to 1991 here, and I can still remember him saying, so in your words, Mr. Scott, Mr. Davis, Miss Bowman, they went, if you say so, no, not if I say so, if you say so, aye, okay. And the police officers that took me downstairs actually said to me, is that your pal? I said, that's my brother-in-law. He said, set fire to him, pal. That was the word of a police officer. I went to prison, and then when I got out for 3 days, home leave, before I got parole, He seen me, and I went back to prison, and the next thing I knew, he had fell out with his missus, he was down in Blackpool, and he committed suicide.
Aye, man.
You know, and it's just like... Aye, well, it's like, wow, well, it's like, fucking hell, man, you know what I mean? It's, there was no call for him to do that, but I mean, it turned out he, then, if you, I say, if you look into it, you'll see Lord McLean gave him a 12-month deferred sentence for good behaviour.
Yeah.
He got out, he come back home, he battled his wife.
Oh, wow.
He caused a bit of trouble. He went back up to the High Court again and got a further year's deferred sentence. I appealed on the grounds that the prosecution had told lies.
Yeah.
They'd manufactured it. And I went to the High Court twice. The first time I went, I presented my case. The prison officer that weighed me, one was a principal officer, was with me. And he said to me on the way back to the prison, you're in there a good chance, Paul. He says, usually they just get thrown out. The fact that you're getting a chance to prepare. The prison got me law books. I read up in law books. I studied it. I went back to court. And the words of the three High Court judges were, that may well be the case, Mr. Davis. However, a jury found you guilty.
Oh, wow.
And that'll stay with me forever.
Yeah.
Forever. And my QC, Ruth Anderson, at the time, I didn't know because I was banged up in prison, right? At the time, she was in for a High Court judge approval. She's now a High Court judge in the House of Lords. And I think I was just at the time, the media and everyone was all high profile on anything to do with sexual offences or whatever.
Yeah.
I just happened to
she's
be.
She's a woman. She wouldn't look good getting accused rape
and
stuff, would you,
right.
I suppose.
And then when I came out, I went and seen my lawyer, Stevie, and I said to Stevie Maxwell, what was what? He says, Charlie, you just need to get your heat down, Paul. He says, we can't get a Ouija board in court. The court accused the deed to kill itself. He says, that's the end of it, Paul. You just need to go in with it.
Yeah.
And I thought, oh, okay, fair dues. But my whole life's changed. And I lost a lot of my life. My father, as I say, was ex-Remy. My nephew, who is an ex-sergeant in the Metropolitan Police, and he was in the Remy. My father used to speak to the two of us at the same time and say, listen, boys, get away to the army. Get away to the army and make a life. Yeah. Kevin went to the Remy. He spent 10 years in the Remy. He ended up dealing with the London bombings and the trains. He was in the tactical arms unit.
Oh, wow.
He came out of that. He opened up an MOT station and Pegasus motorcycle training. I worked away and helped him for the past 20 years with the training, sorting motorbikes. I'm a bike mechanic.
Yeah.
Kevin's now an honoured sergeant, ex-sergeant, the police force, ex-sergeant, I think now. And I work in his garage. I help him out in the garage now again. They're all ex-soldiers. They're all ex-Remy. And I laugh and joke among them all and I go, I am ex-Berlini. I guess so you laugh.
I did a motorcycle school.
Aye, aye,
Yeah, he had one for years, yeah. He was a motorbike mechanic as well.
I love motorbikes. I'm passionate about more. That's all I do nowadays. I've got a wee garage of my own. And at the moment, I've got 18 motorbikes at the moment, classic motorbikes, Harley Davidsons, and I just soldier away. That's my attitude. People will say to me, "How are you?" You know how normal conversation. You all right? And I'll go soldier on. That's my attitude to every day. Just go in with it. I don't think of tomorrow. I don't think of next week. I try my hardest not to think of last week or the week before. And yeah, I just, one day at a time, as I said to you yesterday, I've got pals that have come out of prison and couldn't cope with what they've done and turned to drinking drugs.
Yeah.
And they're dead.
Have you never had issues with drink or drugs, Charles?
Pardon?
Have you had any issues with drinking drugs?
I've been smoking cannabis for 30 years. I used to be a heavy, heavy drinker. I worked in doors, doing the doors.
Yeah.
And I used to buy like two bottles of Southern Comfort to the weekend.
Oh, wow.
I can identify because when you're on the doors, you're putting people out and you're getting threatened and then they're coming back. To be honest, you need a drink in you to deal with.
Yeah.
To give you that. The same with the British Army. My son was ex-Remy. And I remember when he was out in Basra, and I said to him, "You'll not be drinking out there, son." He says, "Dad, there's a 40-foot Arctic lorry sitting in front of us, refrigerated truck, full of cans." I said, "How much do you pay for them?" He says, 30 pence a can.
Oh, wow.
And when you think of Vietnam, they took them through a Charlie so they would get there and kill people.
Yeah.
Alcohol is, I tell everybody nowadays, alcohol is a devil. Alcohol is a devil. It makes you do things that you would not normally do.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? It overrides the, I learned all that in counselling in there too. It overrides your inhibitions.
Yeah.
You find yourself being a hard man and a gangster, and really and truly, in real life, you're actually no a gangster. You're a quiet person, but with a couple of strong comforts in you. Oh, you'll fight there. You would go to Iraq and then fight, you know what I mean?
Yeah, that's mental, isn't it?
That's the effect I had on my life. And then, as I say, good 10 years ago, I decided I'm not drinking anymore. I'm fuck this for a care, and I'm not drinking, and I have a wee smoke, and I look after my missus disabled. I take care of her, I look after her. I help with the housework, I run my wee garage, I help my pals. And a lot of that is down to the life experience that I've had through prisons.
Yeah, probably. It's
kind of taught me. My missus watches all these TV programs like Robert Black and people like that. And I say, "Maggie, I was in a side him. I used to talk to him every week at the canteen, and they never ever spoke to me."
Who's that? Robert Black,
the shell killer.
Oh, wow.
Gus was a shell killer. John, the boys that I was in Peterhead with, they were all lifers.
I was
doing 6 years and I was classed as a Jakey. They were all doing life and double life and whatnot, man. And again, you're dealing with things like this, you'll be more aware of the fact a lot of these people have been abused when they're younger.
Oh, yeah, massively.
And they take it. I mean, I went into counselling groups and I don't know saying names, but I was in 10 years in a group and some of them were horrific. When I think about it now, horrific. But when you listen to their personal stories, this is what they've seen growing up.
Yeah, of course.
When you
said that to me yesterday about the, you know, the rape charge, you just thought, obviously that's got something to do with what happened to him as a kid.
That's where it all stems from. If that hadn't happened to me, as I say, my dad was a sergeant in the Remy, my mum was a staff nurse. My uncle owned the local shop in the village who sold TVs, newspapers, decorating stuff. My two uncles owned that. My other uncle down in Wales is a multi-millionaire. And that's the family I come from. I come from a good family, and nobody could figure out, why is there Charles do these fucking things he does? Why does he do this? A lot of it was when I would meet up with new people, new guys I met, I would be wanting to be kind of, I wouldn't want knowing what happened to me, so I was a wee toughy. Mum will do that. And it was all, when I think back on it now, it was all a show. It was all kind of bravado.
Yeah, it's just a mask,
you
know? Isn't it, that you put on to deflect.
The minute I realised, I don't know if you've heard of the Geese Theatre Company.
No, sir, no.
They put on shows as an identifying the masks that we wear through life.
Oh, okay.
How mask anger and all the different phrases that we kind of pull.
Yeah.
And when the tenors drew that, something touched me in the sense that he's talking about me.
Yeah.
It was the same when I used to go to Alcoholics Anonymous. They'd be sitting talking about the person standing talking. Used to get visitors come into prison. And they'd be telling me I was a bus driver and I'd done this and I'd done that. And alcohol ruined my life. And you're sitting listening to him and going, he's talking about me. How does he know that? He's talking about me.
Yeah.
And then finally it clicked out. That he's talking about you because he's the same as you. Alcohol is controlling you. And of course, the minute you came out of prison, you were out a week or so saying, right, I'm going to behave myself. And before you knew where you were, you were back drinking again.
Yeah.
And then things just get out of hand. If somebody said the wrong thing, well, that caused trouble. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Scary, the brain, isn't it? Scary how the mind adapts.
Oh, totally.
How it, you know, masked and you know.
I mean, the Geese Theatre, it's a drama group, but what they do is they highlight all this kind of, they use theatrical props.
Yeah, of course, yeah.
It's like watching a wee show, but at the same time, what's happening, what's being said, in the back of your head, you're going, how the fuck does he know that?
Yeah.
How does he know that? And then it comes back and you go, wait a minute, is that because my brother's never been in trouble, my sister's never been in trouble, my stepbrother's never been in trouble, my father's never been in trouble, my mother's never been in trouble. I had the black sheep of the family. I don't even talk to my family now.
No.
Because I can't say, my missus keeps saying to me, you need to go and see your sister, man. She's not getting any younger. I say, Maggie, how can I? The first thing my big sister will say to me, how are you, son? Now, if I want to be totally honest, I need to tell her. She's 80 year old, I'm not telling her.
Yeah.
I'm not having her with that in her feet going, oh my God, my wee bit. No, I'm just not having her. I'll keep that to myself.
Yeah.
And just go, and I just say, I'm doing fine, hen. Cracking on, I'm getting on. Aye. No, and that's it. So it's no, I can't be open and honest.
No. For this, more than anything, isn't it?
Yeah. And as I say, it's just one of these things. My dad used to say when I was younger, see, when you grow up, son, your conscience will bother you. You'll wish you hadn't done all these things. But
yeah.
I couldn't stop doing what I was doing.
No,
I was in notorious. Okay. I mean, most of my crimes was car theft. Even as I say, when I got done with that rape, even the police that knew me were like, nah, that's not right. But it was. That's what happened, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And I say, I hadn't been bothered. Well, don't get me wrong, I've had a couple of speeding tickets and my motorbikes and whatnot, but... That's just one of the things too,
hasn't
it? Aye? Yeah. Charles, so what I'm going to do, buddy, I'm going to write to your GP. I'm going to ask them for all of your medical information, if that's okay with you. I won't tell them why I'm writing. I'll just obviously request all of your medical info. And then from there, I'll then obviously gather as much information as I can about your time.
Yeah, well, I moved. That's all happened when I stayed in a village called Catron. That's where I was born.
Yeah.
And that's where my doctor was.
Yeah, it's okay. Your medical records will follow you.
Right. Well, I'm in here now. I'm moving from Catron to Cumnock, and then to Cumnock down to Ayr.
Okay.
In a couple of different villages in Ayr.
What's
your doctor's name, Charles? Well, it's no, we don't actually. Just nowadays, it's just whatever doctors are available.
The practice details, buddy.
Racecourse Road, Ayr. Medical group. Medical Group, Racecourse Road, Ayr.
I'm 96. Let me,
It was a Dr. Chait, but he's now retired and went somewhere else. Last time I was in, seen the doctor, it was a woman I seen. It doesn't matter who doctor I see, I don't. If I phone up and say Dr. So-and-so, I go, aye, that's fine.
Yeah.
Just whatever doctor's available, you know what I mean?
Yeah, and I'll get that. Racecourse Road. And that's in Ayr, yeah?
That's in, what's that road? Dalbury Road?
It's okay. No, that's fine. That's all that
Miller Road. Miller Road. It's on Miller Road, but it's called Racecourse Medical Practice.
Okay.
Yep.
I will. I'll get that for you. What I was going to say, Charles, is once I get your information, I'll share it with you if you wish.
Right.
It's entirely up to you. It's your information. If you want it, you can have it or have copies of. Do you want me to send you copies, Charles?
Well, if you've got a copy, that would be lovely.
Okay, his information. What I'll do then, Charles, I'll come back to you with all the information. Me and you will go through it together. We'll go through all of your statements, make sure that we haven't missed anything out, and then we'll submit that to the Scottish Redress team.
All right.
Once we do that, Charles, we'll hopefully then get what's called a panel date. They will judge on our case and our support and evidence. And from then, we will hopefully get an offer. Obviously, we will advise you whether to accept or reject that offer. And then hopefully we can get you some recognition of what happened to you in your younger years and hopefully some monetary compensation as well.
Yeah. As I say, I've been in Arlene, Lomas, Triton, Pullman, Glen Oakle, and Peterhead. Pardon?
Are they all jails, are they?
Yeah, they're all prisons.
Okay. So I'll write to the prisons authority in Scotland, and I'll get you information from there.
Yeah, that was the Stop Offenders Treatment Programme. That was what that was called. It was a doctor, a professor, somebody from Canada that came over.
Okay.
Uh, I don't know if they still do that programme, but honestly, it was, out of all the times I was in and out of the prisons, young offenders, that was, I know it sounds wrong, but that was the best help I got. Because I was there for a long term. I wasn't just in for 6 months and back. I was there for years. And yeah. I volunteered to get involved just to get a better understanding on why do I keep fucking doing stupid things, you know what I mean? I'm not a stupid person, but I keep doing stupid things, you know what I mean?
No, I get that.
Yep.
Do you have any questions for me, Charles, on what I'm going to do and how I'm going to do it for you?
You get 6 numbers for the lottery tomorrow.
No, very unfortunately.
I've been there.
So what I'm going to do, George, obviously because of the sensitivity, sorry, Charles, what I'm going to do, Charles, just be, obviously because of the sensitivity and the nature of these cases, I've got to go back through our fees with you. Just make sure you fully understand it. Is that okay?
Yep.
Okay, so just to let you know, Charles, you could actually apply to Scottish Redress yourself. You don't need a law firm to do that. Obviously, then it's up to you to how you present that case, whether you go out and find your own information and present that as supporting evidence.
You're better suited to do that. I sort motorbikes. You're a lawyer. You can deal with that.
Yeah, just to let you know, George, there are other law firms out there Charles, I really apologise. Just to let you know, Charles, there are other law firms out there that will help you and not charge you any fees. They get paid direct from the Scottish Government, whether you win, lose or draw. They're paid £2,000. Now, I can't legally comment on those law firms or what they do or probably what's more importantly, what they won't do for you. All I can say is we don't participate in that scheme. We've rejected it on multiple occasions.
That was a thing I signed the last time, wasn't it?
Yeah, we don't want a handout from the Scottish Government. Charles, we want to obviously hitch our horse to your wagon on a no-win, no-fee basis. If you win, we win. You lose, we lose. Fees are capped at 20% inclusive of VAT, so you'll never pay us more than 20%. You may pay us less in some instances, but you will never pay us more than 20%. Also, Charles, it's a genuine no-win, no-fee. What that means is, if we are unsuccessful in getting you any money, we won't bill you for any time spent on the case. The nature of this case is obviously you've been through enough emotional hardship. Our regulator and ourselves as a business, we wouldn't put you in any sort of financial hardship. Is that okay, Charles?
Oh, that's good. Yeah, that's good.
Do you understand those three options, Charles?
Yes. I'm quite happy with you dealing with it.
Okay, fantastic. You're getting further than me
because if I go anywhere, it's always like fees, money involved. You know what I mean? Lawyers and all that kind of thing.
I'm quite happy with that. Okay, fantastic. Thank you for your trust. Just to let you know, Mr. Davies, you do have what's called a 14-day cooling off period. What that means is from the date you sign the document with us, you have 14 days if you wish to leave the contract. You can rip it up, and obviously you can go your separate way. But alternatively, you can waive that 14-day, and I can get started on your case as soon as possible. But that's entirely up to you, sir.
Right. Yep, that's fine with me, as I say. Leave it in your hands. You can do
it. Are you happy to wait the 14-day, Charles, or would you like to wait till after the 14 days? It's entirely up to you.
What do you mean, waive it? I'm happy to go ahead.
I'm happy to go ahead, carry on, yes, I'm happy with that.
Okay.
Perfect. All right, buddy, what I'll do is I'll write to you within the next 2 weeks with all my details, contact details, any after-hour contact information, a bit of an update on, our process and how we're working, and I'll check in with you every month. These things don't turn around quickly, just to let you know. Then it could be anywhere between 6 and 10 months before I even get the information back. But obviously, it's in my best interest to get the information back as soon as possible, so we'll be fighting under the threat of legal.
As I say, when it comes to the government, you could be waiting for the rest of your life, you know.
Some of the Holsborough
people are still waiting and recognition. You know what I mean?
That was on my birthday, that, Charles. That was on my ninth birthday, that 15th of April, 1989. I was 9 that day.
Wow!
Yeah.
And there's still people sitting waiting to get sorted out with that, you know what I mean?
No.
That's the government for you.
Yeah, we'll be a lot quicker than that. Obviously, we'll threaten them with legal action if they don't give us the information in a timely fashion. Generally works. So I'll be fighting to get your info back as soon as possible. But like I said, Charles, I'll check in each month and have a chat with you and see how you're doing.
That sounds lovely, Michael. That sounds lovely.
Buddy, thank you very much for taking the call today. I'm sorry about the call I had to have with you yesterday. I just had to go out and check a few things, but I am glad to say we can obviously proceed with your case, Mr. Davies.
Yeah, that's lovely. Thank you very much.
No, thank you, sir. Thanks for your time. Enjoy the rest of your day.
Right. Will do.
Thanks, Charles.
Okay, Michael.
Thanks for me, buddy. See you soon.
Will do. Speak to you soon. Bye-bye now.
Bye-bye. Bye-bye.